Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the Friday Special, a podcast by Guitar Nerds. Now in this series, in each episode, I'll have a new guest from the world of guitars, amplification and effects pedals. We'll have brands and producers, musicians and everything in between. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined by our special guest, Dan Presenza of More Guitars. Hello, Dan, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Joe. Thank you very much for having me. It's a real pleasure and privilege to be here.
Wonderful. How lovely of you to say, but yes, thank you very much for joining us. Now, dear listener, if you're not familiar with More Guitars, it's M-O-A-R, they're a Danish Copenhagen-based custom shop making some classically inspired but truly unique, beautifully constructed instruments. In fact, they're unique. Yeah, not at all.
Thanks,
but it's your unique look, especially in the case of your hollow body that I think has struck a chord with the internet. And so even if you're not familiar with More instruments, you've probably seen one, dear listener, somewhere on the internet, such as the kind of the originality of Dan's work. But despite being a Copenhagen custom shop, you're actually from London.
Yes, indeed. I'm a Londoner. I was kind of born and raised in London, and I moved to Copenhagen, I think 8 years ago. It's gone so fast, but I think 8 years ago, kind of basically by accident. I planned on being here just for a few months. And then, you know, life happened, and I was working as a guitarist. My background is that as a professional guitarist, and I just got work in Copenhagen, and then I just stayed. It's really nice here. You should come here too.
Oh, it's absolutely lovely. My girlfriend works in Copenhagen and Malmo with
awesome
for a software company. So she tos and froes
between cool.
here and those two places. But yes, it's one of our favourite places to go as well. It's constantly somewhere that we're talking about doing the move to, one of the two, Copenhagen or Malmo. I'm a big village fan. I like living in small villages. So Malmo just had it for me, but she's very much in the sort of the Copenhagen camp.
Well, as a Londoner, I mean, Copenhagen feels a bit like a village. It's really quite small, but it's I love it here. And there's a really, really healthy kind of music scene here. And
there's an incredible music scene there's such a vibrant like blues scene there.
Exactly, actually, that's totally true. Around Mojo Blues Bar is great, and there's like, you know, live music every night to a really high standard, and it's really cool. I love it here. I really love it. And you know, I now have a, you know, I'm engaged, and I have a child here, and I don't plan on moving back to the UK anytime soon.
No,
unfortunately.
No, right.
But no, it's lovely. Yes.
Ah, but, wonderful. Yeah. So you moved over there, and you were a session guitarist at the time when you moved over there.
Well, I was kind of a about 90% of my income came from teaching privately. I started teaching when I was 16, and I took a few years in my early 20s to work actually as a bicycle mechanic. But primarily, yeah, I was a guitarist, teaching, and then having gigs in the evening. But gigs don't pay particularly well often. So right. the truth is that really I was a private guitar teacher that gigged as a hobby. That's kind of where like the idea for my guitars came from, in that I couldn't really find exactly what I wanted from anywhere.
And, well, I'm not surprised with the sort of guitars that you've made.
Well, yeah, I mean, we cycle a lot here. And, you know, I would often, you know, my days would be something like waking up in the morning and having a rehearsal most mornings with whatever band I was playing with at the time, and then teaching most days from kind of 1 until 6, 7 in the evening, and then gigging at night, you know, and that was 4 or 5 days a week. And so my guitar was always on my back, and it also had to be very versatile. And, you know, teaching, I'd be playing electric, but it would be, you know, unamplified. Mm. And so my guitars had to be kind of light, comfortable, inspiring to play acoustically, kind of easy to play. They had to work. And I just couldn't quite, I mean, especially in my budget, I couldn't quite find anything that did all that. I was playing a Tele at the time. And
not the lightest thing.
Also, not, I mean, I really love Tellies. I mean, Fender was an absolute genius. Leo got everything right, and also in terms of like production, he was just. I'm going off on a tangent there, but yeah, Tellies, they're not that light, and also not that comfortable. I mean, if playing for that many hours, I had like almost the red line on my arm tattooed. From my arm being yeah, on sure. the upper, you know. And so basically, you know, more guitars started off with me butchering a Tele. And and then, you know, changing pickups and changing the circuits because I wanted a different sound. And then, you know, a friend of mine asked me to do the same thing to his guitar. And then someone saw his band play live and said, hey, who did your guitar? And then very, very quickly, I had quite a lot of kind of guitar tech work, which is, you know, not at all my background. I'm not a trained carpenter or
so or you were doing that just from working out how to just, do the woodwork
just
initially.
From making a ton of mistakes, right. And making basically every mistake I would say possible, and slowly getting somewhere. I've always had quite a mechanical mind. Like as a kid, I was very into making things, and I mean I've played with wood quite a lot. And also, a few years I took kind of a break from music to work as a bike mechanic. And so I'm kind of good with my hands, and I'm good with tools. And but yeah, just from studying and reading a lot. I mean, also it's such a specific skill, guitar building. I mean, it's not. I mean, of course, it is woodwork, but it's also, you know, understanding.
It's a very narrow area. It's, of
exactly.
It, I
mean, I can build a guitar, but if you ask me to build a door. I would have a hard time. or like a chair that doesn't rock from side to side. I would have a hard time. But it's but you know, I would say that the majority of time, or I think that woodwork actually doesn't take the majority of my time when I'm guitar building. I'd say, you know, fretwork actually. I mean, I always use stainless steel frets, so maybe that's why I spend so much time doing fretwork. But yeah, metalwork, working with electronics, studying acoustics, thinking about resonance. I mean, there's so many other things apart from woodwork, but of course, woodwork's also a big part of it.
Did you then move into like taking luthery courses, or did you?
Not at all. I've always been also with the. I mean, I did take many guitar classes, but I am basically self-taught as a guitar builder. I've been self-employed, you know, for basically all of my life, give or take a few years. So I was able to make my schedule, my gigging and teaching schedule around kind of making mistakes in the workshop.
I see. As you slowly sort of expanded the guitar making to take up more of that
time,
I guess.
Exactly. And, you know, I knew I really enjoyed working on guitars, and I've always been very geeky about guitars, and quite obsessive about guitars, and it was fun. I really, really enjoyed it. So and people kind of asking me, I don't know, like take the finish off of their neck, or maybe a guy had like a very hard V-neck carve on his neck, and I would sand it down a little bit, and I kind of realized that it's not, you know, it isn't rocket science, quite literally. I would just try it out. And I made a guitar. And as I had been a musician, I kind of knew how to promote something because I've been promoting my own band and promoting gigs. And I thought, I'm going to try to do this. I'm going to see if I can kind of see if anything happens here, but kind of put something out into ether and see if anybody reacts back. So I had this idea I made a guitar by myself.
Uh-huh.
I made it totally, and it kind of done the rounds, from local guitarists, and everyone seemed to think it was great.
Was it different to the existing shapes that you now have? Or
it was a bit like a prototype. I was really disappointed actually in it. So in a way, it was a hollow, my first like full build that really I can say is like the start, very, very start of the company. And actually the guitar that really kind of started me getting orders from kind of around the world was this, they're now called Mortys, but it's a hollow kind of T-style guitar made in a unique way. I make my guitars in a very unique way. It was basically just that. And I posted it onto Instagram under the name, More Guitars. And it got a lot of traction. I mean, I had already had the Instagram profile going for a little while, posting about repairs and customizations and stuff, which actually I've gotten rid of all that from the Instagram because I don't do repairs anymore. Somebody basically wrote me saying, "Hey, can I have a guitar like this but with different wood?" And then since then I've had commissions. It really just grew from I can say I've been learning on the job, and every guitar I've built has been a little bit better than the last. And I'm up to my, I'm in my, I think I'm on 56 builds now, 54, 55, wow, somewhere around there. I actually don't keep count. I don't do serial numbers on my guitars. I'm just kind of keeping on,
That's a wonderfully organic way for it to grow. And of course the Instagram has been very successful for you as far as boutique guitar builders, like sort of one person at luthery shops go, you have a very substantial Instagram, and I think it's been very key, that and the short videos that you make and the insights that you have. You definitely feel like you can get more involved with more guitars than with your average boutique guitar shop. You
absolutely
make it very accessible for,
and it's customers can get more involved. I mean, it's not just a feeling. I had a customer in my workshop today who's ordered a Wayfair, a totally custom shape, and he works as a designer, and he actually designed the F-hole shape for his guitar, and
awesome,
isn't that cool? And we spent a few hours chatting about about the exact body lines and whether we were happy with them or not, it's true. I do. Every guitar is unique. I don't have a template I have a template for Mortys, but everything else is one at a time. The slow way. And but I think Instagram has been very good. My business, it feels very strange to be, maybe it's the sign of the times, but I am basically an Instagram guitar shop, and people write me from around the world. And they say, "Can you make me this?" And I say yes, and then a few months later they get it. It's really
you can certainly see that. That's the wonderful thing about how global Instagram
it's incredible
is, and sort of what a wonderful community Instagram is as well. You can really see that because you actually have your wait list visible on your website.
I should update a little bit, but yes, I do. I have my waiting list on my website,
and just flicking through that, you can just see it's like United States, Scotland, Indonesia, Australia, Denmark. There's Florida again, quite a few states ones, Japan.
Yeah.
And then some Copenhagen, some Sweden as well. It seems like there's you're certainly for a little one man shop in Copenhagen, your guitars are getting all over the world.
Yeah, I think there's. I don't think there's one in. I think there's almost one in every continent. I can say that.
Excellent.
I think I can say that. I think there is a really there's a hunger for these guitars, I think, in South America, and I haven't got one there yet.
I see.
And I'm a little bit sad about that. But it will happen.
We should talk for listeners who aren't familiar with the guitars, because we've sort of, you know, I've addressed the fact that they are unique, but we haven't specified in what way. So I wonder if you can do. I want to talk about the models, because of course you know there are a few shapes. For me, the Wayfarer obviously stands out as being fantastic. But I think, and listener, I appreciate if you're not familiar with this, I'm running away with this a little bit. But things like the Naked Morty run that you did recently was just inspired, just a great idea.
Thank you so much.
But let's start with the Wayfarer, and maybe because you call that an evolved jazz box, which I think summarizes it very well.
Yeah,
but I'd love to hear it explained for the listener who's not seen one.
Well, I am not in that much control over what I make, in that I am, you know, I'm a custom shop, and people most of my my models started off as a commission, and then someone else, you know, my portfolio is basically my past builds, and somebody else will see it and order another one and order another one. And then that's how these things come about. So my Wayfarer started off as a commission from a guy called Julian, who's a good friend of the company now, of course. And he basically said, hey, I love this hollow kind of telly you made. Do you think you can make a 330 inspired guitar in the same sort of way? And I said, I'd love to try. And he said, you know, here's some money and take as long as you like and get back to me when it's done. He's like the coolest customer. And basically I see guitars as tools, and they have to kind of serve their purpose. And that purpose can also just be to inspire creativity, and that is, I also see that as part of its function. So I started off with I kind of looked for a long time at the 330 and tried to kind of pick holes in it and tried a bunch of really high-end ones. And I found a few things that I didn't really like or didn't quite sit right on the body. And then I also actually brought some, I tried some 330s on people of different body sizes. And there are a few kind of general things that just, the guitar wasn't designed around the player. So I made like a full-sized prototype, and I just took a rasp and I had at it. And until, you know, there wasn't a line on my arm, and my chest wasn't kind of flapping over the top of the the hollow body. Yeah. and this guitar was a 24 fret, actually, the first one, and getting with a 25.5-inch scale length. So getting good upper fret access on to the 24th fret on a long scale length with that type of body didn't quite work either. So I started off with the body shape that was very comfortable, and then had this prototype, and then I just kind of made one, and another one out of mahogany and hollowed it out, and I think it came in around I think that build was around 3 kilos, maybe a little bit less than 3 kilos.
Wow.
So that's like, I don't know, is that 7 pounds? I'm not very good with that. They're also, you know, it's important to me that my builds are light, because they have to be comfortable, you know, and
sure.
And also I find that often lightweight builds tend to resonate a little bit better, at least to my ears. The wood is easy. It can be easier for the wood to kind of sing, at least in my experience with hollow body guitars, if the guitar is quite light. Uh-huh. And then small things like, you know, very, very careful hardware choices so that everything is working in harmony with the wood. And it's just, as I say, I'm kind of evolving all the time. And the first one, I really love that guitar, but the Wayfarers now have changed quite a lot from then. And I'm kind of constantly evolving, but it's as you say, it's basically an evolved 330. Or I can also do them with a center block. I've done a few kind of 335, although they of course look the same.
It looks like a 330 that's been made in a wind tunnel. It's everything.
That's a very, very good description of it, actually. Yeah. But it's also, it's very versatile. Actually, I have a few guys who play kind of, you know, very hard rock, and I like to kind of experiment with different thicknesses on the top and the back. So I can kind of control feedback a little bit by adding more mass in some places and removing it in other places where it's not going to feed so much. And it's really interesting. I mean, I really, I spend a lot of time with each player, And also I listen to lots of their music, and each one is made kind of to the player.
Yeah, it's like a, yeah, there's like definitely, it feels like there's a lot of love that goes into each of these, and you are, whilst you're keeping the identity of more guitars, I do feel mm-hmm. like you're making sure you offer everything. Everything is very specific to that mm-hmm. player. I mean, you're very Absolutely. Good at using your Instagram to promote those players sometimes. When
they're part
when
of the family, you know, they are part of, you know, they I'm investing in them, you know, and they're yeah, of course, investing in me as well. And each guitar, you know, I have a lot of commissions now, and on my commission wall, I don't have, you know, Walnut 332 Firebirds. I have Paul's guitar, and then I have John's guitar, and then, you know, I have Sophie's guitar.
The rest of the Beatles.
Yeah. Exactly. Not Ringo, though. And so, yeah, that's kind of the person is involved in, you know, from the first Instagram message or first text message or whatever, the person who the guitar is for, they are at the center, and you know the guitar is shaped around them, and the pickups are voiced. I mean, I also wind my own pickups; they're voiced for the player, and you know, I listen to a lot of their music. And for example, I have a guy's ordered an Explorer shape. He's actually called it an Exmora.
Yes, this is the first one you've ever done, right?
Yeah, I have never done one before, and I don't quite know why he's come to me, but I'm very happy he has. And he is in a kind of an up-and-coming metal band, and they've just been signed, and they're really, really good. I don't listen to that much kind of you know, thrash metal. But they're great, and great guitar tones. And, you know, he came to my workshop, and I think he tried a few different kind of custom guitar builders. But I had really listened to his album, and using my pedal board and the guitars I had in stock, I kind of got the sound from his recorded kind of sound. And I think that type of thing really really helps to create trust with a customer, you know. And
sure,
they are really they're totally part of it. And I communicate even after. I mean, I spoke about Julian, the guy who ordered the first Wayfair. You know, he's we're good friends. I mean, I am good friends with all my customers, I'd say, actually.
Yeah, I actually think the first time I saw a Moore guitar was because of one that I saw in a picture of a band playing. I can't remember the name of the band. They were Icelandic. Oh. I don't know if that narrows it down for you.
This really does. There's a woman, she's actually from the Faroe Islands, but she's quite big right. in Iceland, and she's called Iva. Yeah. And she is she's incredible. She is really, really incredible. And she is on tour all the time. So she's really good to have as someone playing one of my guitars. And she has extremely good sound. So I know that the guitar always sounds really, really good. But yeah,
it's
she
like
has
a dark wood Wayfair,
yes,
isn't
exactly.
it?
Yes, exactly. She has a Wenge Wayfair. And it's actually made a bit around a Strat configuration, although you wouldn't think it to look at it. But it's two single coils and a P90 in the bridge. And one of these freeway six-way switches, if you know them. So it has you know, all the five kind of Strat style positions plus the two outer pickups together. And she's great. She's on tour. Actually, that guitar has I think it's strung up with 13s. She plays
yeah!
with her.
Yeah, man. Oh, that's right up my street.
She plays with 13s on one of my guitars, and it's really and she sounds amazing. It's really I'm very proud that she has one of my guitars, actually, and she's
it looks very cool. Mm-hmm. It looks so, I mean, obviously they are so lightweight, but it just looks, I've never seen a sort of 335 you know, 330 style guitar being thrown around so much. It's I was
also,
like,
I mean,
oh,
they are still full thickness at the center. I mean, in the center they are you know, like 4.5 inches.
I've seen some where you've made the lower F hole hollow. Is that right? Is that something that you've done?
No, what that is
there?
Is that is where I have taken a that's where I've taken a photograph without a cavity cover on the back.
I
don't want to make my life so difficult and do the electronics through the F hole or something. So actually, I put a cavity cover on the back of the guitar.
I see.
And,
okay,
so
that
yeah,
makes sense.
If there is not a When a guitar is in my workshop, it basically doesn't have a cavity cover on it. It's like, you know, when you get home, you take off your shoes. Yeah. no guitars in my workshop have cavity covers on because I'm always mucking around or it's just easier. So yeah, very often if I'm taking a photograph from a certain angle, you can see through the lower F hole to the ether behind it.
Yeah. I see. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Now, you obviously, as you said, you wind your own pickups as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of the time when I see your pickups, you use like a gold foil style, appearance.
Yeah.
Is that because of weight? Is that to sort of reduce the amount of heavier metal that's on the top of it? Or is it just aesthetic?
I would be lying if I said it was for weight. Right. it sounds no,
I was trying to be clever.
I mean, there are arguments that it sounds a little bit clearer, but then if you were saying that you go the whole hog and not have any cover on it, basically it's because it looks really, really cool.
I see. Yes, that does make perfect sense. It wonderfully suits, especially the Wayfarer. Now, so far, mm-hmm. we kind of have only spoken about the Wayfarer.
Yes.
And the other, I think, you know, whilst there is an other shape and bases as well, I'd love mm-hmm. to talk about the Morty.
Yes.
Which, as you mentioned before, is kind of your T style.
Yes, exactly.
Which has the same treatment as a Wayfarer, kind of a, mm-hmm. yeah, a sort of a wind tunnel.
Yeah, or I like to think maybe kind of refined, but not in the way, yes. like, I've not tried to make it posher, like not refined in that way, but refined in the way that I've kind of purified.
Ergonomic.
Without being a bit, like, I don't make, if you kind of searched for ergonomic guitars, you wouldn't see guitars that look like my guitars.
yes,
do you know what I mean?
Yes.
The Morty.
Was that your second guitar then? Did you make this after the Wayfarer? Or no, sorry, you said that...
My first ever kind of, you know, full build that kind of actually did kick off the company was a Hollow Telly, which is now called a Morty. It's my... My Instagram followers name my guitars. So the Wayfarer was called the Wayfarer because it's Wayfarer thin. And somebody, a bunch of people put in suggestions for names, and then I put it up to a vote at the end. And then the Morty. It was going to be the Morty or the Naughty. And actually, I personally preferred the Naughty because I thought that's quite funny. But the Morty. It's I keep coming back to tellies. I really love them. I also really love, you know, I just love the guitar, but there's just something about that shape and about that single cut. I mean, that there are...
Is it the simplicity of it?
Yeah.
Because your guitars are very simple.
Like, I try to keep them as clean as possible, you know? And like, if I can talk someone out of having a switch and out of having if, for example, a lot of my guitars don't have tone knobs.
I'm so into this.
Yeah, because, you know, I think most people have their guitars gunned. You know, most guys have their guitar on, you know, wide open volume and the tone on full 95% of the time. And I of course, if somebody wants a tone knob, they will get it. I'm not going to try to talk them out of it. But, you know, when push comes to shove, very often guys actually are quite happy not to have one. So, yeah, the Telly, the Morty, I think is it's like the purest guitar shape, you know, electric guitar shape that maybe there is. I mean, maybe someone would argue a Strat, but of course the Telly came first. But it's kind of my other, you know, I have a few other models, but, and of course each guitar I make is a bit, a little bit different, so it's kind of hard to categorize everything. And the Morty is like I think it's also the guitar I've tried to price the lowest. I started off as a guitarist, a gigging guitarist, you know, and teaching, and I had no money. And I've tried to kind of price that guitar around what I could have aspired to afford when I was gigging. And
this is such a common theme at the moment, I think, mm-hmm. For people like yourself, for luthiers, for one-stop shop luthiers, that they're just... You're all being so conscientious at the moment. You know, I'm speaking to people like SMP Guitars, who have just released their...
I know Fidelity did something similar, actually.
Fidelity have done... Yeah, they've done their Light series, where they're meant to keep a guitar under a grand.
Yeah.
SMP did it, where they released a range
actually,
which was around £1,500. Mm-hmm. LT Custom recently did a 1699 sort of unfinished version of their guitars.
You really know your stuff, huh?
I'm just really into.
I just love cheap
really
guitars.
Into small custom. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I love cheap guitars. But no, it's a fantastic thing to do, and that kind of leads us on to what you did, because you didn't just make the Morty an affordable instrument. Mm. You then went on to introduce relatively recently the Naked Morty, which was your first batch run guitar, and you did.
Yes, exactly.
It was your first batch built guitar, and you was it 10 you made and
14
sold 9 14 you sold 9 14. In the first day.
About that. It's actually funny, like I so you know, we're going through a global crisis at the moment with the, you know, the coronavirus, and I thought that business was going to go really, really down.
Right.
Turns out actually it didn't. People were stuck at home. Most people were still earning a salary, and actually my orders really went up. But I didn't know that at the time. What really, really kind of gets me going is seeing people playing on my guitars and getting them out as much as possible. I had the idea. Well, the idea kind of actually started off with a very large, I'm not going to say the name because I don't think I'm allowed to, but an extremely large online music store basically reaching out and saying, if I could figure out a way of making a guitar around a certain price point, they would be very, 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 very interested because they really like what I'm doing.
That's fantastic for you.
It was very exciting. And then I kind of put some feelers out to see if there was any way I could kind of get them made outside my workshop and then sent to my workshop and then, I don't know, part assembled something or whatever. Hmm. And I just couldn't get the idea off the ground in a way that the quality still felt high and the price was still...
It's definitely...
You know, the price was still going to fare.
It's an impossible thing to do, I think, as a sort of one-person shop. And it's Stonefield Basses did it recently by having the basses built in India.
That'd be amazing.
So they could make a, but I know from speaking to Tom Stanley, who does those, that he was like, it's up and running now, but you know, for the amount of time he spent going to and from India during the setup, he's like, I'm not sure I've made any money on the first lot, you know.
I have a plan for how I would maybe make this work, and let's maybe go into it in a few years. I'll come back on the show and we can talk about it.
Okay.
But anyway, so I hit a brick wall with production. And then I was kind of having a conversation with a guy who was hanging out at my workshop. And I had this kind of eureka moment of not putting finishing oil on the guitar and shipping it kind of naked or unfinished. Actually, they weren't. I don't think Naked was my name. I think it was a customer that said, I'm getting one of your Naked guitars. And then that kind of spiraled into this thing.
I love how much consideration you have in what your customer base suggests. It seems to sort of every other thing that you talk about is something that someone had mentioned, which is wonderful that you listen so much.
Yeah, of course. You know, I mean, I'm communicating with my customers all the time, I mean, I can, my phone's been buzzing in the background whilst you've been chatting, and it's customers, you know? Naked Morty batch. Had the idea to ship a guitar without any finishing oil, because often my guitars are in the finishing stages for almost 2 months. I will wipe on a very, very, very thin layer of finishing oil every day for about a month, maybe a month and a half. Sometimes I'll wait a day or two for it to dry in between. And then, that's kind of how I get my, walnut to look that good.
Incredible.
It's just many, many, many extremely thin coats, and then sometimes polishing it back a little bit and then building it up. So, and then also when guitars are hanging up in my workshop for months, it's very likely that they can get a scratch or something, or it just takes up space. So I had the idea of not doing that and trying to ship a guitar with a bottle of finishing oil. And actually the first batch was a bit too cheap. I think I'm going to do it in pounds because I'm feeling kind. It was.
Wait, do it in US if you can. The bulk of our listeners are US.
Absolutely. Yeah, they were $1,050 shipped in a hard case.
There you go.
To your front door.
Oh, that's
which is
so
insane.
Cheap.
And what you got, I even gave them choices. It was you could choose between an ash or one piece mahogany or two piece ash body, a maple or mahogany neck, and an ebony or rosewood board. And I wasn't scrimping on the woods. The woods were the same woods that I would put on my customs, you know, my high-end customs. Stainless steel frets, a hand-wound pickup to their specs. You know, I mean, if a guy
it was a single pickup, right?
A single
that
P90.
That was the deal. Absolutely. But any position.
Any position you wanted, but a single P90. And only a volume knob. And no customization, more or less. Although some guys said, can I have a baritone? And I said, all right, then, because that'd be a laugh. And it's a little bit of extra money. And yeah, I sold, I said 10, that was a hard limit. And as you say, I sold 9 in the first day. And the second day, I had a lot of people kind of to-ing and fro-ing, and I sent out 4 or 5 invoices to kind of try to close the deal. And they all came back positive the day after that. So suddenly I had to make 14 of them. And which is really great. I mean, I'm not knocking that at all. I think it's extremely happy for it. And what's really, really cool is that, you know, I'm shipping them out now, and you know, one's just been stained totally black with a calligraphy ink, and that's a finish I would never do that. And it looks amazing. It looks so cool. And you know,
this is on your Instagram. It's the most recent, as we're recording, you put up a little video.
Yes, exactly, of a guy called Carl Blackwood. And it was
Carl Blackwood. I immediately went and checked out that band because I loved his playing style.
He's great, isn't he? Isn't he great?
He's great. It's so interesting.
I am so proud that these guys are getting my guitars. You know, it's the best feeling. And you know, in 10 years' time, you know, I will Google Naked Morty, more guitars, and there will be some, you know, guitar covered
slime
in
slime green.
Yeah, you know, and that's great, and that's something that I would never offer. I mean, of course, some will be finished with it. I mean, I am giving them oil, and they can use that. And I'm also
the more stop,
the more stop door stop. Cool, blimey. Yeah, I am. What this is included in each sale now, if I can. You know, when I'm cutting a neck out. There's like a wedge shaped piece of wood on the neck blank, and I will try to I'll keep it aside for each guitar, and then I'll turn it into a doorstop with
so good.
Isn't that cool? And yeah, more stop doorstop and a t-shirt and a bottle of oil. And you know, I really like to it's just really fun, I think. Really fun.
I bet. And so you're going to do a second batch of the.
I've announced a second batch, and they also sold out very quickly. Much smaller batch this time because I have a lot of commissions as well, and a lot of commissions coming in. I have something like I think I have 40 or 38 guitars that I need to kind of get done before the end of the year.
What?
It's a lot, and I have two hands. I have two hands. Yeah. I mean, a lot of them are started, or you know, partway, or some of them I just have to wind a pickup or something, or whatever. But yeah, really, a lot of guitars, and so it's not. I mean, actually, the Naked Morty thing isn't. It's not that I need the work, if I'm honest. It's actually just that I want people to have my guitars, and I'm kind of.
I actually think the whole idea is a wonderful way to expand a brand. Anyway, I've said this to everyone I've spoken to who's tried this batch build thing and making an affordable boutique guitar. It's like, you don't have to do it all the time. Just do a few. And
yeah, exactly.
It's such a wonderful way to get your name out there and your brand out there.
Also, yeah, I mean, I think, two of the people from the first batch have ordered a Wayfair.
Really? Well, yes, there you go.
Exactly. And I mean, that wasn't my intention, but I'm, you know, it doesn't hurt. That happens.
And what do Wayfairs start at? The custom shop Wayfair?
Wayfairs are a bit dearer. I'm on my website now. I'm actually I'm raising my prices at the moment because I have quite a lot on. They've also been, I think, a little bit too low. And also I've been improving. Let's keep it in dollars.
Yeah.
If I can, I'm going to go to my website right now. My base prices are always as low as they can be. And that's just, so the base prices is just one P90 and one volume. And then on my website, you can see the prices of, you know, basically every pickup you can think of and, you know, different trims or binding or whatever. They start
the website's
off...
actually excellently laid out.
Thank you very much.
You know, if you want to check it out, it's so easy to just be like, oh, I wonder what it would be like, what the price difference would be if I had different inlays of my own face. And there is a price guide for that. You know?
Absolutely. And I think, there are, of course, things that I've skipped. I mean, I am a custom shop. People write me, very specific things sometimes.
I'm sure.
And it's very hard to cover everything in the kind of optional extras price list. But I think I've done an okay job of including, there's like a inbuilt more hand-wired overdrive effects is included. And I have a whole section of fun stuff, which is like extra string, baritone scale length. But anyway, Wayfair starts off around $2,740 plus shipping. And that's for one P90 and a one volume knob.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's around 2.9.
Very aggressively priced.
Yeah, well, I run a tight. I've fought with my. I really like my landlord, but I have I've got my quite a good rent. Actually, he might even listen to this. He's quite a big fan of me being here. Hey, Peter. I have good rent. My my suppliers. They really look after me. They're also kind of really into what I'm doing. There is this whole kind of feeling of goodwill, around more guitars, and there's these customers that are so into it, and it's this big community, and all my suppliers are included in that, I wouldn't exist without them,
You've said very good things about your wood supply base.
Guitars and Woods in Portugal. They are, their name is Guitars and Woods. I always say Guitars and Woods in Portugal because they are in Portugal. Guitars and Woods are. More guitars would be a very different business if they weren't around or if they weren't offering the same things. For example, I haven't checked, but I'm guessing, I haven't checked for the sake of the splinters on my fingers, but I'm guessing around half of my commissions are Wenge. I'm not going to check my waiting list, but I think maybe half of them are Wenge because Wenge guitars are so cool. They didn't happen to have Wenge in stock one day, then, I wouldn't be making Wenge guitars. And they really look after me. I actually put in a request for them to find good, reliable, dry, a sustainable source of Bibinga body blanks, and they pulled through. I now have I don't want to offer them yet because I've been looking for good Bibinga body blanks for a few years, and I have six in the workshop, and I keep looking at them thinking what I'm going to make with them. It's really hard to get Bibinga body blanks.
really
hard. And my guys, their job is looking for wood.
Warwick's bought it all, I imagine.
Yeah. Something like that. But they had one set last year, which I got. And I just got five just now. So I'm very, very excited for making some.
That's awesome.
I've actually planned to make I try to make a showpiece build every year. Last year was the black one that Ivor has now, the Wenge one.
Right.
And I had planned to make a Bibinga Wayfair I'm not going to go into what the ideas are because it's going to be really, really cool. But I've not had time. I've had so many builds. It's been I look forward to the day where I can show off this Bibinga. It's going
to
be amazing.
I would be interested to see where you use the big chunk of Purple Heart that you recently got from Encore.
Yes, did you see that?
Amps.
Yeah.
I did. Well, because those amps are so good. And the one you got was fantastic. We should definitely talk about that as well. But
I am very happy to talk about that. Do we have time to talk about that?
Yeah, we've got all the time. Yeah,
Uncle Amps. So he's become a good friend of mine, actually.
Uncle Amps in the US.
Yes, Mike Uncle. Really, really good guy. So he actually bought one of my guitars. He bought my, to date, the only one of my third model, which we can maybe talk about in a minute. He bought this offset guitar from me. It's a beautiful walnut offset with a Bavinga neck. And I didn't know who he was. He just bought it as, you know, kind of a cold customer, as you like. I saw that his name was Uncle Amplified, so I figured he's kind of in the trade. So I gave him a little bit of a discount, but nothing substantial. And I was a little bit relaxed. I think he committed to buying it just at the very start of the huge corona outbreak in the States.
Right.
And I said, just pay me a few hundred dollars now, and whenever you can, pay me the rest, and I'll hold the guitar for you.
That's incredible of you.
And he was pretty good, actually. He got the money quite quick, and he said, you know, I have customers flying sometimes from Australia to try guitars in my workshop. You know, I had this small workshop. I'm actually quite conveniently by the airport, so quite often I have a guest to the shop who's flown here, and they're here maybe for a day or something. And the people that buy my guitars take their guitars quite seriously. So he said he'd love to have an amp in my workshop for people to try, you know, when they're trying guitars. And I didn't really know that much about him at the time. I knew he was an amp builder, of course, and that he bought some pedals, but I didn't know kind of how committed he was. So I gave him a brief. I like to, when I'm testing guitars, because that's basically all my guitar playing is. I plug it in, play for 2 minutes, make sure everything works, and then out the door. And I like to do it extremely loudly and very clean. It helps, at least for my ears, to play very, very, very loudly. If you're playing kind of a quiet amp, you have to kind of search for the sounds sometimes. It's kind of search for the buzz. So there's a little bit of an extra hum, or if it's not grounded properly, or if the pickups are slightly microphonic or something, if you have to kind of search for that sound, it's a little bit irritating. So with this, you know, this amp, I said I wanted something that was, you know, is too loud and clean. And he made me exactly that. And it also sounds amazing. That's the thing. It sounds, I mean, it has, it's totally open. It doesn't compress at all. I mean, it's bizarre how little squish it has in it. It's a totally valve, 40 watts, but it's just wide open.
It's like 40 watts?
40 watts, yeah.
I didn't realize, because it's tiny.
I said that I didn't want anything. I said I wanted an EQ, a gain, and a master. So I think it's quite small because there's not that much going on. It's just
not very wide. Yeah, I mean, still very tall. Tall enough for all those tall valves, and I guess all that wattage.
I have a Marshall JCM, and it's about half the size. Like half the width of one of them. So it's a good size. Since receiving it, I've just been absolutely blown away. Every time I plug it in, it's incredible.
It actually looks like the perfect pairing for your guitar.
Yeah, I think so, actually. I really think so. He lives near a very good wood workshop. Apparently
that's evident.
Yeah, so he gets really good wood. And then he sent me some Purple Heart just as a gift, along actually with the amp and a pedal board.
The pedal board looked lovely as well.
Yeah, it matches the amp. It's pretty, it was a good day the day that arrived. And then, but he's got me hooked. I mean, since that arrived, I've bought a few of his pedals. And actually everything has been incredible. The guy, I mean, he deserves to be so successful, but you know, and everything's got a tube in it. I mean, I have a reverb pedal from him. It's not really a reverb pedal. It's like it's like a space maker. It has like
talking my language now.
It has like a gunned belt and brick in it, and you can't control actually really anything about the reverb sound or the kind of the wash. But it has a three knob tube powered gain pedal in it. And if you really, really crank,
right,
and the chip is going through the valve, you know, the power valve. So if you really, really crank the input, then the reverb gets bigger. It's called the Space Ape. It's amazing. I don't think he has any more of them in stock, but if anyone
sounds
listening,
wonderfully organic.
It is amazing. It's this warm, you know, kind of, it's, I was gonna say warm, dry reverb, but it's really special. He, like, there's so many one man shop pedal builders, you know, and guitar builders, and I do get sent stuff quite often, and I'm extremely thankful for that. It's really, really great. But I didn't know what to expect from him, and his ears are really good. He can hear something. It's really everything that I've had from him has been just voiced perfect for the guitar, and like really good high end actually. Like it's quite. Sometimes really? Things with a lot of high end can sound a little bit brittle, and but it's just really well voiced for the guitar. Really, anyway, Ongle, he's great.
he is great. Yeah. Attention to detail seems to be a real key part of everything he does.
Absolutely,
and just I think aesthetically, it's that obsession with woods that is something that I thought really, really matched everything that you do. You don't actually do any paint finish guitars, is that right?
I have done it just the once actually, and I really don't enjoy the process. And
right,
when I was kind of as I said, I've been learning on the job, and I try to say yes to everything. Less and less now, but a few years ago I literally said yes to everything, and just because I wanted to learn, you know, and yeah, so I took on this it's basically a Strat. It has a built-in Tube Screamer type pedal, and it's got a nitro finish on it, but I really don't like doing paint jobs at all on guitars, and I think I do offer them on my website, but I think I add about $1,000 to the price, you know, UK,
right?
Just because I don't want anyone to do it. I mean, if somebody says they want a black guitar, I lean them in a direction, or a red guitar, I lean them in a different direction. Because there are woods that cover most colors.
Yeah.
You know, apart from like green or I don't know.
Sure, sure.
Blue or something. But it's also, you know, I am kind of, the longer I'm going, the more kind of clear what I do is, you know.
Yeah, I think it's fine to have a sort of vision and a concept of what your brand is. And if your brand seems to be premium woods, that's totally fine to have that as an aesthetic choice.
Also, I mean, it started off actually from a tonal kind of perspective. I mean, before I was even making guitars, I was stripping, you know, thick, nasty poly finish off of Fenders, and they just felt alive afterwards.
Right, yeah, I mean,
and
I hate poly.
Yeah, I've, yeah. You know, and I, to a lesser extent, a guitar with nitro will feel, resonate a little bit better when you strip a nitro finish, and at least in my opinion, and you know, all these little 1-2%, even no 0.5%. I've started doing scalloped nuts because it makes a little bit more resonant nuts.
Oh, really?
And yeah, wow. I mean, if every choice you make is that just a little bit better, then the overall result is something that feels very alive and really like an instrument. You know, like not like a toy or like a kind of a guitar shaped object or something that sounds nice plugged into a certain amp, but really like an instrument, you know, the same way that I think, you know, like a violinist would look at the violin, you know, where I think often guitarists, they'll say, oh, I've got a Strat, I've got a Tele, I've got a Les Paul, and it's a Strat and it's a Tele and it's a Les Paul, but they might not see it as a kind of a musical instrument. Do you know what I mean? Is that a kind of a strange thing to
understand.
Say?
No, not at all. I totally get it. I mean, it's about making every facet of that to do with its usability rather than aesthetics first, I guess.
You would never get a guy making very high-end violin. I mean, you probably, now there's going to be a bunch of people writing me, but you wouldn't ever get a guy making very high-end violins painting them. I mean, because it kills the wood. It stops the wood from breathing properly. And I know I'm making electric guitars primarily that are maybe half of them are solid, but I don't want to sacrifice that, and you can feel the difference. I mean, it's I'm gonna sound like I'm kind of promoting my work a lot too.
I do think luthiers who build guitars from scratch are allowed to sound a little bit, you
I mean,
know,
it sounds a little bit pompous, but I mean, it's very my guitars, I aim for them to feel alive, you know, and for them to really I do, you know, like my neck joints, for example, are really tight And, you know,
there are some wonderful Instagram videos of this demonstrated, dear listener. If you want to see how tight a neck joint is, I would be afraid to do that with a guitar when it's got bolts in it, let alone that.
Yeah. My neck joints are very, very tight, and that adds quite a lot to sustain. And you know, like, very careful choices, like headstock thickness adds a lot of resonance, and the tuners use, the weight of your tuner versus the headstock thickness adds a lot of resonance, and bone nuts are much more resonant than you know, plastic ones. And it was, you know, even the bridges I use, I almost always use cut-off Telestar bridges with three brass saddles. I get intonated ones, so they still intonate. And they really, I mean, I've A-B'd on the same guitars, set up a little bit differently. I've A-B'd this kind of cut-off T-style bridge versus like a Tune-O-Matic. And the difference is huge in acoustic volume and resonance. And, you know, if you put your hand on the guitar to feel vibrations, if you think about it, it's a metal plate, the Tune-O-Matic. Yeah. Metal plate resting against the guitar's top.
I guess so, that's a lot of contact, I guess.
Exactly, exactly. Whereas the Tune-O-Matic is not that. And
I guess I've always just defaulted to thinking of a Tune-O-Matic as like, that is the best version of a bridge. That is the way a bridge should be.
The range of adjustment is not very big on them as well. I mean, if you, I have heard, stories of people that have brought, you know, Gibsons into me, they can't intonate properly because there's not that much range of adjustment on them. You know,
that is absolutely the case with
really, really Gibsons. Often, if you look at even very high end, I'm not going to say any names, but very high end guitar builders using Tune-O-Matics, they will very often have the saddles right at one edge, and you'll think, you know, that's not really right there, man. Like, that's a problem with those bridges. I mean, they do, of course, if you're building a guitar around that kind of neck break angle, then yes, you need that extra height. But of course, because I'm making guitars from scratch, I can control the neck pocket depth and the neck break angle, so I can allow for use of that type of bridge. It's really interesting stuff. I mean, also, like, my truss rods, my truss rod adjustment is all via like a hole cut into the 21st fret. And actually, that is to get more material under the nut.
Oh, is that right? It's very modern. It's a very modern, like, it's one of the few things that's very modern about your designs, having the truss rod access at that end.
Yeah, but actually, it's all about sound. It's when you play open strings on the guitar, the sound goes through the saddles and through the bridge and through the nut. So you want to have really good saddles. And so I use these very, very high-end brass saddles, and I make my own bone nuts. And then the sound goes, you know, into the wood in the case of the saddles and into the neck from the case of the nuts. Now, if you cut a channel underneath the nut, then you're removing a lot of material that, you know, sound could be going through. And so my truss rods, they end like kind of around the middle of the first fret,
right?
And and there's a big difference. I mean, it's really it's absolutely fascinating. And especially with this Naked Morty batch I'm just doing, I've made 14, you know, more or less identical guitars. And being able to try these things out, scalloped nuts, doing two scalloped, two not scalloped, and then testing it out.
That's good. Yeah,
it's really fascinating.
I guess you've never had so many of the same thing there to be able to A-B so exactly.
Or it's been quite awkward. Like I made a wayfair with an angle, like a neck break angle that was just about okay for both a Tune-O-Matic and for a Telestyle. If you maxed out the Telestyle, I didn't sell that guitar. It was for prototypes, but. Yeah, it's been fascinating. I mean, I'm always kind of trying to better, and kind of refine what it is I'm doing, and it's really interesting. You know, I'm really, I think I'm always, maybe because I didn't study, I'm always kind of trying to learn. You know, I don't see myself as like a trained. I see myself as a trainee.
No, I guess it allows you to be maybe a little bit freer than a lot of trained luthiers.
Who
essentially kind of follow, you know, very much sort of well-trodden paths.
Yeah, it's interesting actually. Some of the only negative contact I've had has been from people that have been trained luthiers, basically saying, what about the tradition of guitar building? And Yeah, which has been a little bit strange, like, because I think people see, you know, the 330 as this is how this guitar should be made, you know?
Right.
And of course, I see it as a space, you know, I see it as a platform to make improvements on. And
Evidently. I mean, I am a massive traditionalist when it comes to guitars. Mm. I don't even like, you know, new finishes. You know, I'm like,
me neither.
I like things to be like from the big brands. Things have to be year specific reissues. I don't like it when they do decades. That's not good enough. It has to be a year specific reissue of something for me to care. But you know, the first time I saw the Wayfarer, I was like, oh, this is fantastic.
I really appreciate that.
I think you've managed to keep the essence of that sort of body shape. You haven't made it modern. I say that as a compliment, because as a guy who doesn't like modern looking guitars, you've managed to make a kind of ergonomic, a sort of classic mentality to the instrument, you know, whilst making it very, very playable. Certainly, I think, you know, and I do just want to talk about or find out about my favorite thing that I ever saw you build as a bass player first.
Ah, okay.
Wonderful to see that you actually did Wayfair basses, but you made a left-handed, like three dogged P, like triple dogged P90. And it was a...
It's not left-handed. It's actually a reverse headstock.
Oh, is it a reverse headstock?
It's a reverse headstock,
I assumed it was left-handed.
I've actually not made a left-handed bass yet. I'm making a few left-handed guitars right now. But it's a right-handed... it's a guy called Philippe. He's a rock bass player based in New York. Really cool guy. And I had the coolest customers. This guy, he wrote me saying, can you... you know, make me a Wayfair version of your a bass version of one of your Wayfairs. My favorite sounding pickup, he said, is a mini humbucker rail pickup for like a Strat or a Tele or something.
And then
he said, and actually what I'd like to do is I'd like to was that maybe my idea? I can't remember whose idea it was, but somebody said, let's put three of them in the guitar or the bass. And then let's put some dog ear gold P90 covers.
Well, certainly the dog ear P90 covers for bass are something that Ceric basses are currently, you know, making a mint off of. They've released the B90, as it's now known, and the dog eared P90 by Ceric basses is something that's appearing kind of all over the shop at the moment. But this was the first time I'd seen them.
But yeah, they're actually not P90s. They're just covers. And I mean, he is very active on stage. I actually have to say that I wound these pickups for him. These are mini rail humbuckers. And then I watched a bunch of his videos. And sometimes he uses his pickup as a fret. He's a very rough player. Really cool guy. I actually, I took the pickups apart and rewound them after watching videos of him playing live, because I wanted them to be totally bomb-proof. And I think I've made something really special. And it's a really cool bass. And I love bass players. They are the best customers. I mean, I also love guitar players, but bass players tend to be much more like, you know, here's a rough brief, here's some money, and take your time and get back to me when it's done. Whereas, you know, I have had, and of course this is also totally okay, but I've had guitar players send me their hand dimensions and, you know, wanting very specific nut widths and very specific neck. And this is, you know, I am a custom shop. That's why you come to people like me. So that's totally fine. But bass players, I have yet to have had a kind of finicky bass player customer. I don't think they exist. I don't think they exist.
Thank you. But what? Incidentally, what scale length was that? Was it a 30.5 or a 34?
It's a 34.
It's a 34.
34 inch bass, yeah. I'm making
Did you manage to make it balance at 34?
Yes.
Amazing. just from the lightweight body, the sort of large headstock, I was like, I wonder if that balances at 34, you know?
I mean, it's something I thought about, of course. And I when I carve my bodies, I'm kind of aware of the hole. when I'm from practice, I've made quite a few of these. I know where I want to place weight and place mass. So yeah, it balances. Yeah, pretty much perfect. It's good, that one. I have another one, a very similar build.
I've seen another one,
and that has a 2x2 headstock.
Yes. Oh, I actually love that. Well,
it's just been sitting actually. That base has been sat for a little while. Because I've had other things I needed to focus on, but it's going to be on my bench again this month. Actually, it's been on a hiatus, that build.
Is that the first 2x2 headstock, or you know, side-by-side headstock?
Yeah,
you've done?
Again, you know,
oversized F holes. I'm into that.
Yeah, me too. I think if you're going to have F holes on a base, make them massive, because why not? I have actually all my bases. So no, actually that's not true. I have made a solid body base, but I also made a hollow body P base that I shipped out a few months ago, and that had a massive F hole as well. That was a lovely base actually. I think again that was like 2.5 kilos, maybe 2.8.
Wow.
And okay. It was P base, ash body, maple neck, Babinga board. I can't remember the scale length, but yeah, it's I love making basses. It's really it is a different challenge actually to making a guitar, and it's a different balancing act. And
sure.
Yeah, I love them. I love them. Yeah. And I love the customers. So please, bass players, hit me up. I'm waiting for you.
Now, before we wrap up this podcast, we've got one more body shape that I really want to talk about. I definitely want to cover everything
in
this episode, which we did talk about briefly, the more offset, because not only do you offer a T style and a sort of 330 style, there's also an offset, which is, I guess, maybe... You know, offset's such a broad term, and I don't want the listener, if you haven't seen it, to think that that means Jaguar
or Jazz Master, like a Jaguar, because it's Master,
no, it's very much its own kettle of fish.
Yeah, well, it's I'm sensing a bit of a trend here, but a customer called Josh, he wrote me saying, "Hey Dan, I think you would do a really good version of this, and do you think you could do it?" I mean, kind of. We spoke a lot about the shape we liked and even what woods. It was a really, really inspiring conversation just on Instagram, and about how we would like it to be, and the thickness here, the thickness there, and the cuts here and access up here and, you know, whatever. And I was so inspired. He actually didn't put any money down because we hadn't agreed a price or anything. But the next day I went to work and I made that body. I've never done that before. I was
it's
so inspired.
Not a good business practice.
No, it terrible idea actually, but that guitar did of course sell. But yeah, it was it is quite a small body. It's a kind of like it's about a telly in terms of its, you know, body mass, but right. But with very different lines. And I really love that guitar, and I love that shape, and I love how that guitar came out. And I have actually recently gotten quite a few orders for... It's funny, my orders are always a few months behind when I complete a guitar, because, you know, people... like, models normally start with a commission, like the Wayfair, and then I make one, and then people see it, and they think about it, and then a few months later, they order them. So now is actually when I shipped out that guitar... I don't know, maybe 3 months ago or something, and actually now is when the orders start coming in for that body shape, because people need some time to think about it, or they write me a price and then we chat a little bit, and then they go back and they think, and then they come back and whatever. Actually, Josh, the guy whose idea it was, he didn't buy that guitar. He wasn't ready to make one or to buy one yet, but he has now commissioned one, and it's going to be great. It's all Wenge, a Wenge body, Wenge neck.
That's a trend for you.
Yeah, it really is. A maple fretboard and three.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, hell yeah. And then a cream binding and three cream P90s. Three P90s.
Oh, this sounds incredible.
A trapeze tailpiece, floating ebony bridge, which actually I'm going to make from Wenge. So floating, yeah. So actually that's not going to get my ever loving cut-off T-style bridge, because he was
so is that it. Is that your first ever floating bridge?
No, Wayfair number one had one.
Cool.
I think I've always got a few lying around. I mean, I have a lot of stock, so I do sometimes I will fit also actually in on a hollow body that has a trem, so like a Bigsby or a Jazzmaster. I'm making a few Jazzmaster, you know, style trem Wayfair's at the moment, they work really... There's a Gretsch-made rocking bridge. It looks a bit like a kind of like a metal cigar. That sits on an ebony bridge, and that's a really good system for working with the trem. I haven't found a way of doing that yet with kind of a T-style. I actually don't think there is a way of doing it with a T-style bridge. I think something has to be moving. And if something's moving, of course, there isn't a solid surface for you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, it's not my first ebony floating ebony style bridge. I've made a few of them, and I actually like them a lot. I mean, it's a little bit of a faff to...
I'm a big fan. I mean, yeah. You know, I predominantly play an ES-175, so I'm
cool.
You know, but yes, a floating bridge, you know, wonderful idea. I'm glad you're in kind of...
I think they're great. You know, I mean, I think that might also be getting a piezo. I need to look at my...
Sounds very cool indeed. You did something recently with that. I saw something you had...
I'm really into them.
Me too. This is very cool. Talk to me about this.
I'm really into... kind of alternative sounds where possible, and the cool thing with piezos is they're, you know, they're hidden, and also you know, the piezo element, the little you know, the raw piezo thing is very, very cost effective, and so you can kind of, you can buy 10 of them and experiment and find some way of kind of... So I don't go to Fishman and, you know, and buy a like an onboard preamp or something. That doesn't really turn me on. Also, I really like passive circuits and guitars. I can't be bothered with batteries, and it's so anyway, there is a way of wiring a few piezo pickups into each... Actually, I'm not gonna go into the secret, because it's I spent
keep
a lot...
that one to yourself.
I spent a long time figuring out a way of having a passive piezo circuit that could match the volume of a P90. I have this Wayfair, and actually I have quite a few more with piezos on the waiting list now. But the idea was that this guitar has a single P90 neck, and I really love P90s. I love single coils, actually. I really love that there's kind of something wrong with them, you know. I like things you have to kind of struggle against a little bit. So anyway, P90 neck, and it's if that's all you're getting in a guitar, it can be a little bit muddy, especially, you know, playing through fuzz or something, or there's a little bit of, there's not that much clarity in the kind of the sound of the guitar. So, like, you know, moving your fingers up and down, and little knocks here and there. So, so I added this kind of piezo system that I kind of designed, but it was through trial and error and reading a lot of electronics magazines. I figured out a way of kind of getting piezos to do this thing. So yeah, this guitar has a single P90 in the neck, and then a piezo system is actually attached. It's very little, but it's, it doesn't weigh anything. It's attached to the under, you know, to the guitar's top, but on the inside, and it kind of acts like a reverse tone knob to the P90. So as you engage the piezo, it adds more top end. And
that's very cool.
It's very cool, and I have
it sounds like it's more interactive with the rest of the guitar than a normal 100% piezo is.
100%, and you know,
I've always found piezos on guitars to be like, whilst you can either really like them, or they can just be this totally random thing that as soon as you turn to it is going to feedback all over the place,
exactly,
or cause you problems.
I set it up with that guitar has, you know, has two knobs, and it's one knob for the P90 and one knob for the piezo. So
right.
I actually kind of see the piezo as like, you know, piggybacking on the P90. It's or maybe vice versa. It's there for clarity. And I think the piezo on its own, I'm not going to lie, it is not the greatest sound in the world. You know, it's not there.
They need to be supplemented or heavily
affected. Yeah, I mean, it works. It is there to make the P90 sound amazing. It's there for the P90 sound to have a bit more of like, you know, like the sound of your fingers as they go up the neck, and little, and just
it's that organic sound, isn't it? That sort
I mean, it sounds a bit like having a microphone in front of the guitar.
Yeah,
or
it's
something.
Like you're listening with your ear against the guitar. Yeah. You know, that's what it
that's
should
exactly
be.
What it is. And it's it's funny that people, I think, who I've written with about that guitar haven't really gotten it, but right. The people that have come to my workshop to try a guitar have all ordered that in their guitar.
I see.
And it's kind of magic.
Things,
I mean,
you've got to try it to believe it.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I mean, it's also kind of trying to get someone hooked on the idea of something that doesn't sound very good on its own is quite difficult. But it's
PSO is not something that everyone's into, is it?
It's also definitely a contentious thing.
I mean, you know, they're kind
of also not very cool. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, it's not that cool a thing to have.
No.
As a way of adding an extra sound, I think it's really cool.
Absolutely. It sounds like an awesome, super interesting thing to.
It does
add
do
to
you
guitar.
Know if you want to do kind of the you know the gypsy jazz. It does that sound actually very very well
right.
On its own. It does have a sound, but it's not something that I wouldn't want to just have that in a guitar. I think I'd go a bit mental.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, that is pretty much all the time we've got on for this week's episode of the Friday Special. It has been absolutely wonderful having you on, Dan. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us.
I really, really, really appreciate it. It's been it's a real honor to get to speak to your listeners, and I'm a big fan of your show. I mean, I'm in my workshop on my own every day, many, many, many hours. And sometimes your voice is the only voice I hear or your voice and your guests or your co-host. So it's really, it's so nice to get the chance to talk back to you rather than just have you talk at me through my stereo.
Well, no, yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's
wonderful to get to learn the insides of what are such interesting guitars that I really feel have taken the internet by storm, you know, even outside of people purchasing them. But listener, you can of course check out More Guitars at moreguitars.com. It's MOAR. And also, you know, if you're not already following them on Instagram, again, it's More Guitars. So go and check them out, because you know Dan does such wonderful updates of everything he's doing, from videos of the players that are playing the guitars to his own little videos to photos of everything that he's making. It's a really informative, interesting Instagram.
Oh man, thank you so much.
Not at all.
Thank
you. Can of course catch more Guitar Nerds over on Patreon at patreon.com/guitarnerds, or join us on any of the major social platforms with @guitarnerds. And we'll be back next week with our regular episode on Wednesday and another Friday special on Friday. We'll catch you then for more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.